Picture this. We have Berkshire Hathaway, the legendary firm built on finding businesses that require almost zero capital to grow, right? Mm. Well, they just committed $10 billion to Alphabet at roughly $350 per share.
Right.
But, and here's the hook, they made this massive allocation on the exact same day Alphabet announced a staggering $190 billion in capital expenditure, which, you know, they paired with an $80 billion stock sale.
It does look like a complete contradiction. I mean, we are talking about an investment firm famous for actively avoiding capital-heavy battles, yet here they are, taking a massive position in a company, embarking on one of the most expensive physical buildouts in the history of corporate capitalism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why would they do that? That is the paradox we are pressure testing today in this deep dive. To understand this allocation, we have to look at the analysis presented in the Averaging Up collection.
Yes, the author proposes a very specific framework there.
Right, a framework where every business is fundamentally composed of two elements.
Mm-hmm.
First, there is the A, which is the toll the business collects today. Then there is the B, which is the wave of growth that compounds that toll over time.
And that B can take two entirely different forms, which is crucial here. When a wave of growth arrives inside a protective moat, costing the business virtually nothing to capture, the framework calls this a free surfer.
Because the growth is essentially frictionless.
Precisely. But when growth requires massive capital, intense effort, and occurs outside that protective moat, it is classified as an imperfect B. It is a highly mechanical, heavy form of expansion.
So applying that directly to Alphabet, Google's search advertising business is the classic free surfer. Every time, say, a million new users search for a recipe or a local business, Google does not have to build a new factory to serve them.
Right, just scales.
It is a natural way of compounding inside an impenetrable moat at near zero incremental cost. But their current ambitions in artificial intelligence and cloud computing, well, that is the imperfect B.
Because those ambitions require that $190 billion to build vast physical infrastructure.
Exactly. And today, we are going to explore why that enormous expense is not a liability, but rather the entire foundation of an intelligent asymmetric bet.
To really understand why Berkshire embraces that massive expenditure, we have to first examine the hidden flaw in the type of companies investors traditionally view as flawless.
The capital-light businesses.
Right. The article points to legendary capital-light compounders. Think of See's Candies or Coca-Cola. Warren Buffett favors these businesses because they earn extraordinary returns on the capital they employ.
They require almost zero capital to maintain their operations. But they suffer from a severe structural limitation. They have almost zero capacity to absorb new capital.
I mean, the candy market eventually saturates.
Yes. See's Candies can only open so many retail stores in California before they simply run out of demand. You cannot force customers to buy more boxed chocolates just because the company happens to have extra cash sitting around.
And Coca-Cola rides a steady but ultimately slow global beverage wave.
Right. Because these companies physically cannot absorb their own profits to fuel new growth, they throw that cash off, they hand it back to the shareholder in the form of dividends or buybacks.
Which introduces what the author calls the reinvestment problem. When a business returns its cash, the shareholder is now burdened with finding a new home for that capital.
Think of a capital-light business like a high-yield savings account, but one with a strict unyielding deposit limit.
That is a helpful way to visualize it.
The interest rate you get on your money is spectacular. But if you hit the limit, or if the account generates a massive interest payment, you cannot deposit those new funds back into the same account. You are forced to take your cash and shop around for another bank, entirely at the mercy of whatever the current market rates happen to be.
You are back to square one, essentially.
But wait, let me push back on this a bit. In traditional finance, returning cash to shareholders through dividends or stock buybacks is the ultimate sign of financial health. It demonstrates management discipline.
That is the conventional wisdom, yes.
Right, so why are we framing the burden of reinvestment as a negative? Having a business throw off so much excess cash that you get to decide where it goes next sounds like a luxury, not a flaw.
It certainly sounds like a luxury, right up until the moment you have to execute it year after year. The issue is that forced reinvestment interrupts the compounding process.
How so?
Well, compounding is mathematically optimal when it remains uninterrupted and frictionless. When a company pays a dividend, that capital exits the protective ecosystem of the business. It gets taxed, creating immediate friction.
And then it just sits there.
Exactly. It sits in your account, generating nothing until you make another decision. You are forced to enter the market over and over again.
Which exposes you to immense market risk.
Precisely. You have to research new businesses, evaluate their management, time your entry, and hope the new choice has a moat as strong as the one you just took your money out of.
That is a tall order.
It is. The original business might have been generating a 40% return on capital, but now you are forced to deploy your dividend into a broader market where the average return might only be 8%.
I see. So the perceived luxury of choice is actually the burden of repeated flawless execution. The investor has to do all the heavy lifting.
Exactly. And if the fundamental flaw of a pristine capital-light business is that it forces you to endlessly search for a new home for the cash, then the ideal business must act as its own solution.
It needs to be a massive capital sink.
This aligns with the principle Warren Buffett articulated, which is central to the framework in the article. Buffett noted that the best business to own is one that, over an extended period, can employ large amounts of incremental capital at very high rates of return.
Notice the shift in priority there. The rarest and most valuable architecture is not the one that needs zero capital. It is the one that can absorb massive, ever-growing amounts of it efficiently.
And Alphabet represents this exceedingly rare architecture. The search business generates more cash than almost any corporate entity in history.
But unlike See's Candies, Alphabet actually has a place to put it.
Right. They are building the compute layer of the next technological paradigm. Artificial intelligence infrastructure and cloud computing require relentless, colossal investment.
We are talking about acquiring land, building massive data centers, securing cooling systems, and negotiating long-term power contracts. The business itself is the home for the cash. They do not have to hand it back to you.
We have to break down the mathematics here, specifically the critical distinction the author draws between absolute returns and percentages.
This is a crucial point.
It is. Investors are frequently obsessed with percentage returns. A company boasting a 30% return on invested capital is universally celebrated on Wall Street. But percentages do not build fortunes. Absolute dollars do.
Let us compare the two for the listener. Say you find a highly efficient software as a service company. It has a 30% return on invested capital because it only requires a few engineers and some cloud servers to operate.
A classic capital light setup.
Right. But its total addressable market might only allow it to deploy $1 billion before it saturates the entire industry. 30% of $1 billion produces $300 million. It is a highly efficient percentage, but it runs out of room. You simply cannot put another billion into it.
Now contrast that with Alphabet's situation. Let us say they earn a significantly lower 13% return on their massive $190 billion base.
That 13% produces roughly $24.7 billion continuously every single year.
And because the capital sink is so deep, because the global demand for AI compute is so vast, they can take that $24.7 billion next year and plow it right back into more data centers at 13%.
Compounding a base that quickly surpasses $200 billion.
The capital light business simply cannot do that. A large base at a respectable compounding return fundamentally outpaces a high margin business that mathematically cannot scale its underlying base.
Absolute dollars compound into fortunes. High percentages on small bases just create nice, finite businesses.
Okay.
But wait. I have to challenge his preference. A 13% return sounds almost pedestrian compared to traditional software margins, which, you know, often sit in the high 20s or 30s. Does accepting lower margins, purely for the sake of volume, contradict the goal of finding the highest quality business?
That is a fair question.
Are we settling for a utility-like return just because the pile of money is large?
We are not settling for a utility-like return. We are acknowledging the realities of scale. A 13% return is significantly above Alphabet's cost of capital. If a business can deploy $190 billion at a premium to its cost of capital, it creates enormous economic value.
I see.
The goal of investing is to maximize the final dollar amount of wealth generated over decades. The capital-absorbing giant wins that race, even if the percentage looks less dazzling on a spreadsheet.
Okay, we have established Alphabet can absorb the $190 billion. But Buffett's principle contains a strict condition. The business must sustain very high rates of return on that new capital.
Yes, that is the linchpin.
This is where the thesis faces a serious vulnerability.
Yeah.
Can they actually sustain that 13% or whatever the eventual margin turns out to be?
That is the pivotal question. To answer it, the article draws a sharp distinction between operating inside a moat and operating outside of it.
Right.
When a business reinvests capital inside its protected franchise like Google, improving its core search algorithm, or a regulated utility expanding its grid, the high returns endure.
Because they have a monopoly of sorts.
Exactly. They endure because no competitor can enter that specific arena and compete those returns away. The network effects and data advantages are too strong. The moat shields the profits.
But that $190 billion is not going into search. This capital is being deployed explicitly outside the core moat. It is going into cloud and AI infrastructure.
Which is entirely different territory.
Exactly. In that arena, Alphabet is forced to compete on a level playing field against Microsoft Azure and Amazon Web Services. We are talking about entrenched competition against two of the most well-capitalized corporations on Earth, both of whom have decades-long relationships with global enterprises.
And the economic gravity of a level playing field is absolute. Without a protective moat, returns are inevitably pulled down toward the cost of capital.
Because it becomes a price war.
Right. If Amazon cuts prices on compute power by 10%, Google must respond or lose market share. If Microsoft leverages its enterprise lock-in to offer vast incentives for AI integration, Google has to match them. It is a commodity war, and that competitive dynamic inevitably erodes margins.
Wait, I have to stop you there.
Yeah.
If they are throwing $190 billion outside their moat into a commodity war against Amazon and Microsoft, mm-hmm. isn't that exactly the dangerous, mechanical, imperfect bee the framework warns against?
It is indeed.
If the fundamental condition of protected high returns is violated by this level playing field, how can Berkshire Hathaway possibly justify a $10 billion bet? It looks like they are buying into a margin-crushing war of attrition.
It is the defining risk of the investment. You have accurately described the imperfect bee. The capital is heavy, the competition is fierce, and the returns are entirely unprotected.
So why do it?
Berkshire made the allocation anyway, and the reason lies in the structure of the bet itself. It is not a blind leap into a margin war. It is a meticulously structured asymmetric bet. We have to examine the anatomy of their entry point.
Okay, let us look at that. Berkshire's entry was at roughly $350 per share. The author argues that at this price, they are paying a fair valuation strictly for the core search business alone.
Yes, they are effectively buying the most powerful advertising tool in history.
And because search is so dominant, and because it generates such an immense volume of free cash flow, it completely funds the $190 billion AI and cloud deployment while leaving the core economics of the company intact.
That is the key. Alphabet does not need to take on dangerous debt to fund this build-out, and they do not need to dilute shareholders. Search pays for it.
That structural reality creates an asymmetry of outcomes. Consider the two scenarios, basically heads and tails.
Right. Let us look at heads first.
If the coin lands on heads, Alphabet's inherent advantages, its global scale, its unparalleled proprietary data, and its deep engineering talent convert that level playing field into a genuine edge.
If they win the AI infrastructure war, Alphabet builds a new moat around compute. They achieve those high returns on the $190 billion base, and the outcome is extraordinary. They become the ultimate capital-absorbing compounder.
And if the coin lands on tails, what if the AI returns are completely competed away by Amazon, Microsoft? What if the margins in cloud are driven down to near zero?
If it is tails, the search moat still anchors the investment. Berkshire bought search at a fair price. Even if the $190 billion yields mediocre returns, the underlying engine of search continues to generate massive value.
So their downside is protected.
Precisely. The worst case scenario is an outcome that is merely very good. They have floored their downside through valuation while leaving the upside completely open.
This brings to mind the remarkably candid quote from Charlie Munger included in the article. He stated, "I feel like a horse's ass for not identifying Google. We screwed up."
That is a powerful confession from one of the most disciplined investors of our time.
It really highlights how long they observed the power of that search moat from the sidelines before finally stepping in.
Munger's regret stems from missing the initial pure free surfer phase. Berkshire typically required extreme predictability, and technology was historically outside their circle of competence. They watched search generate unprecedented cash with zero capital requirements.
But their eventual entry demonstrates an evolution in their thinking.
Absolutely. They recognize that a dominant free surfer capable of internally funding its own imperfect bee is perhaps an even stronger strategic position.
Synthesizing this for the listener, what we're seeing is that Berkshire Hathaway is not abandoning the free surfer model. They are not suddenly in love with capital-intensive businesses for their own sake.
Not at all.
They are using the absolute certainty of a free surfer, which is searched to seamlessly fund the costly, probable, and uncapped upside of an imperfect B, which is AI infrastructure.
That synthesis is correct. It confirms that this strategy preserves the hierarchy of investments outlined in the framework. The free surfer remains the purest architecture. It is mathematically superior to grow without cost.
But holding a business that securely funds its own infinite expansion without requiring the shareholder to continually solve the reinvestment problem might be the most intelligent position achievable in modern capitalism.
Berkshire holds the certainty of the toll and the option on the future compute layer simultaneously.
It is a remarkably rigorous journey of logic. We move from exposing the hidden weakness of perfect capital-light businesses, the fact that they force the investor to bear the tax friction and behavioral risk of constant reinvestment,
which is a burden most underestimate.
We then explore the necessity of finding a massive capital sink, an architecture capable of absorbing billions while compounding absolute dollars rather than just percentages.
Right.
We navigated the sheer dangers of deploying that capital on a level playing field against entrenched giants like Microsoft and Amazon. And finally, we arrived at the power of the asymmetric bet, using an impenetrable moat purchased at a fair price to entirely fund a high-stakes war for the future.
It renders the massive capital expenditure not a liability, but the ultimate call option. It fundamentally changes how one should view capital expenditure. It is not universally a drain on resources. Under the right architectural conditions, it is the engine of permanent, uninterrupted compounding.
That is a revealing conclusion to our deep dive today. I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. Consider the assets, the projects, or the businesses you manage right now. Are they merely throwing off value that forces you to constantly hunt for the next opportunity? Or have you deliberately built an architecture that can seamlessly absorb and compound your ongoing efforts and capital over time?
Finding your own capital sink might be the most important strategic decision you make.
Indeed. For a deeper exploration of this framework and the companion pieces, including the mechanics of the imperfect B and the duration spectrum, be sure to visit the full Averaging Up collection at averagingup.com.